So, what trouble do you fear so much that you would actually ignore it? Do we do that kind of stuff? You know, people say that we guys do that all the time with our health. You know, something bothers us, we'll ignore it because it's something we don't know. And the reason we don't want to know it is because it may remind us that we're not 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Okay.
Financial stuff. And while that's painful, it's not as devastatingly painful unless you run up a big credit card bill and you know it's a coming. Then you get nervous and anxious and you try to figure out how you're going to solve it. Yeah. Yeah, that would be a very... No, I mean, hey, if you haven't been in that position at least once in life, I think we've been there at least twice. You know, one time we went to family and family helped us out and we paid them back quickly and everything was good. But, you know, we knew that it was going to run short. We had to refinance our mortgage and everything. We restructured a bit and everything got okay. Then, you know, sometimes you have more medical bills than you expect you're going to have and you have to figure out how you're going to pay the medical bills. And it's easier to pay the medical bills now and then pay Uncle Sam later whenever you have to deal with the extra taxes. But you can figure that out. You have a little time. So as we look at chapter 20, and we're going to try to do 20 and 21 today in Job, we're going to go back to one of the three amigos. We're going to look at and see what Zophar says, because with him it's not so far so good. It's him responding to Job, and he's really tired of hearing Job say things that he has no answer for. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at what Zophar says, and then we're going to go back to Job. We're going to look at the kind of both sides of this back and forth, so that we have a little better context this go round for what's being said. So we're going to look at the whole chapter number 20, and then we'll look at 21. I do have a couple of questions for you on 20, but we're going to get through 20, and then we'll. So Zophar the Naamathite replied, said, "My troubled thoughts prompt me to answer because I am greatly disturbed." So he's all upset, and Job's the one in trouble. "I hear a rebuke that dishonors me." What happens whenever we have somebody that challenges a deeply held view that we have? We get defensive. And I think that's a lot of what's going on here. You know, Job is not playing the party line. Job is asking questions and making comments and addressing these three guys in ways that they did not expect him to respond to them. And so they're frustrated with him. So I hear a rebuke that dishonors me, and my understanding inspires me to reply. That sounded a little funny to me. Okay. So this is what he says. "Surely you know how it has been from of old. Ever since man..." Now, I got to tell you, anytime I ever have any one of my students that says something like that, I circle it and say, "Please don't do this." "From the dawn of man, since history began, don't do this." And here we have Zophar, who lived in that time, who's talking about from time before that, and here we go. That's a long time ago. So he says, "Ever since mankind was placed on the earth, that the mirth of the wicked is brief. The joy of the godless lasts but a moment. Though the pride of the godless person reaches to the heavens and his head touches the clouds, he will perish forever like his own dung." That's weird. I mean, it's like, we're just going to expand this, okay? "Those who have seen him will say, where is he? Like a dream, he flies away, no more to be found, banished like a vision of the night." Next slide there, John. "The eye that saw him will not see him again. His place will look on him no more. His children must make amends to the poor. His own hands must give back his wealth. The youthful vigor that fills his bones will lie with him in the dust. Though evil is sweet in his mouth, and he hides it under his tongue, though he cannot bear to let it go and lets it linger in his mouth, yet his food will turn sour as a stomach. It will become the venom of serpents within him. He will spit out the riches he swallowed. God will make his stomach vomit them up. He will suck the poison of serpents. The fangs of an adder will kill him. He will not enjoy the streams, the rivers flowing with honey and cream. What he toiled for, he must give back uneaten. He will not enjoy the profit from his trading. For he has oppressed the poor and left them destitute. He has seized houses he did not build. Now, wow. That's very eloquent, is it not? Now, the part that really gets to me that in all of that, which is, I mean, all those illustrations and all those analogies and things that he says, they're all over the top, okay? But the thing that I want to point out, John, go back to the last slide for a second. When he starts to talk about, though evil is sweet in his mouth and he hides it under his tongue, though he cannot bear to let it go and lets it linger in his mouth, yet his food will turn sour in his stomach. I'm sorry, but whenever I read that, I see him pointing his finger at Job. Because essentially what he's saying is, you won't fess up. We're telling you you've sinned. We're confronting you with that because we want you to be better. But you won't do what we want you to do. You won't do it. You won't fess up. And so you're lying. You're telling us you did nothing. You're lying. And it's going to get you. Okay? But the funny thing is, you know, they think it's already got him. Okay? All right, John, next slide. So he says, surely he will have no respite from his craving. He cannot save himself by his treasure. Nothing is left for him to devour. His prosperity will not endure. In the midst of his plenty, distress will overtake him. The full force of his misery will come upon him. When he has filled his belly, God will vent his burning anger against him and rain down his blows on him. Even though he flees from an iron weapon, a bronze-tipped arrow pierces him. He pulls it out of his back, the gleaming point out of his liver. See how it's like, who needs Halloween 3, you know? The terrors will come over him. Total darkness lies in wait for his treasures. A fire unfanned will consume him and devour what is left in his tent. The heavens will expose his guilt, and the earth will rise up against him. A flood will carry off his house. Rushing waters on the day of God's wrath. Such is the fate God allots the wicked, the heritage appointed for them by God. All right. So that's a mouthful. Okay. There's a lot to be saying there to somebody who has nothing, who all they're saying they have left is their integrity. So what's right about the words of Zophar? Is there anything right in what he says? Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True. Okay. He does. That seems to be in keeping with what we know to be true, since we have a little more light than he did. So what's wrong with the words of Zophar? Yes, it could. In fact, example one is right in front of him. Does God, when we do not confess sin, or even if we have a lifestyle, let's say we had a lifestyle of cheating people. The last time that I counted, there were not a whole lot of lightning strikes on car salesmen. You understand what I mean? Shady ones. Ones who change the terms. Certainly not Dan. It doesn't always work like this, does it? Well, it's because we agree that God's character is just. And we want things to be just and fair. And we like the idea that the bad guys get theirs. But there's the problem with that is we forget that we're saved by grace. And we try to compare ourselves with them to make ourselves feel better when we ignore that we also need to confess and repent and enjoy grace as well. It's like they do. So you think that Zophar is really uttering sort of a veiled condemnation of Job again. That whole thing about the lie being under his tongue. And then you swallow it and you end up with snakes in your guts and all that kind of stuff. So let's look at 21. This is how Job responds to what he just said. What Zophar said. Job says, listen carefully. It's kind of like, come on now, slow down and really listen to what I'm saying. Okay? Let this be the consolation you give me. How about that? Cut me some slack here. Bear with me while I speak, and after I have spoken, mock on. So it's kind of funny that Zophar would say that Job, in his desire to hold to his integrity, would be in some way doing a disparaging thing towards him. And then Job is saying, no, 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 it's the other way around. And if you want to go back to it, listen to me for a second, and then you can go back to being playing your tape and doing the same thing you've been doing. Is my complaint directed to a human being? Why should I not be impatient? Look at me and be appalled. Clap your hand over your mouth. Okay, that's the... When I think about this, I am terrified. Trembling seizes my body. Why do the wicked live on, growing old and increasing in power? They see their children established around them, their offspring before their eyes. Their homes are safe and free from fear. The rod of God is not on them. I can just see the steam coming out of Zophar's ears right now. Their bulls never fail to breed. Their cows calve and do not miscarry. John, let's go on. They send forth their children as a flock. Their little ones dance about. They sing to the music of timbrel and lyre. They make merry to the sound of the pipe. They spend their years in prosperity and go down to the grave in peace. Yet they say to God, "Leave us alone. We have no desire to know your ways. Who is the Almighty that we should serve him? What would we gain by praying to him?" But their prosperity is not in their own hands, so I stand aloof from the plans of the wicked. So how did Job then interpret Zophar's words? His attitude was, they are doing what? Are they comforting him? What is it that Job says, this is what you're doing, and as soon as I'm through with what I'm saying, you're going to go right back to it? Does Job perceive the things Does Job perceive things as they are when it comes to the wicked? Is he right as he looks at life around him and sees what happens with the wicked? All right, that's a good one on the board. So he sees that all these things that Zophar and the other guys are saying about how God deals with the wicked don't seem to be as cut and dried as they portray it to be. It is not that whenever somebody is in sin, even maybe even has a lifestyle or a habit of sin, God does not necessarily go like squashing a bug. So instead, God allows that to rock on. In fact, they may die and be just fine, thank you very much. It seems like their families continue to do well, maybe even passing along generational sin. And it just kind of goes on and on and on. And Job's observing this. So why does Job then, what does he decide to do? Even though he sees that there is a definite disconnect between what these guys are saying, who are representing kind of the collected wisdom of the day. Okay? How does Job say he chooses to deal with people who may be in the midst of all this lack of integrity and sinfulness, even though they haven't been squashed yet? What's he going to do? Verse 16. How does he see it? Okay, so all these people who have robbed, stealed, cheated, they're doing pretty well. They're going on. It seems like there's no judgment for them. Okay, at least that's the way it looks like. He says, if you look at it in the proper way, what is the proper way to look at it? Their prosperity is not in their own hands. They may believe it is, but it is not. Now, that doesn't mean we like it. It may mean that it makes us angry. But the truth is, God causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust alike. Now, we're not an agrarian society, so that doesn't rile us up quite as much. But if we were all farmers, we would be buying into that. We would understand that what that's saying is our livelihood and our sustenance is something that God brings upon everybody, whether they are just or unjust. God's in charge. He's sovereign. And Job says, I stand aloof from the plans of the wicked. Now, once again, he's declaring, this is how I would deal with that. And you know that that is going to send the hairs on Zophar's neck. When he said that, you know how you get that chill thing that goes up your spine sometimes? Well, it just went up there. Okay? Because here he's saying, I don't want to have anything to do with folks like that. Even if God hasn't squashed them yet. Because I know. And I can see, and you can see what's going on. He says, yet, how often is the lamp of the wicked snuffed out? How often does calamity come upon them? The fate God allots in His anger? How often are they like straw before the wind, like chaff swept away by a gale? It is said, God stores up the punishment of the wicked for their children. Now he's going to take a sidestep here, okay? That's essentially what Deuteronomy says when it says that God visits the sin of the fathers upon the children, even to three generations, okay? And you have to understand that the religious teachers took that and boy, they ran with that idea, okay? And he says, let them repay the wicked so that they themselves will experience it. So Job's saying, okay, I'm hearing you say this about this is what God does. He lets the children suffer for their fathers. But what is Job saying? How should it be? Okay? The reality is, those who sin should be the ones who deal with and have to suffer the consequences for their sin. Let's not talk about they die and they're happy and their children have to deal with it. Pass on, you know, kicking a can down the road. You know, because that's kind of what these guys were saying to Job. God's going to kick the punishment down the road to somebody else. It's not the ones that did it. It's going to go to their kids, whether they buy into the sinfulness or not. All right, John, next one. Let their own eyes see their destruction. Let them drink the cup of wrath of the Almighty. For what do they care about the families they leave behind when their allotted months come to an end? Can anyone teach knowledge to God, since He judges even the highest? One person dies in full vigor, completely secure and at ease, well-nourished in body, bones rich with marrow. Another dies in bitterness of soul, never having enjoyed anything good. Side by side, they lie in the dust, and worms cover them both. What's he saying there? Not only does everybody die, the bad dudes die and get buried, the poor dudes die and get buried, and the idea is that they're probably righteous because they didn't cheat, lie, steal, and all that stuff. Yeah. So you have these two people. They end up in the same place. They're both there. And so he says, I know full well what you are thinking. The schemes by which you would wrong me. You say, where now is the house of the great, the tents where the wicked lived? Have you never questioned those who travel? Have you paid no regard to their accounts, that the wicked are spared from the day of calamity, that they are delivered from the day of wrath? It's kind of like saying, you guys don't get out much, do you? That's what he means with all that stuff about travel. He's saying, you must not get around because you don't see the same thing I see. All that stuff you said happens to the bad guys? It doesn't seem to be very accurate. so that the wicked are spared from the day of calamity, that they are delivered into the day of wrath, who denounces their conduct to their face, who repays them for what they have done. They are carried to the grave, and watch is kept over their tombs. The soil in the valley is sweet to them. Everyone follows after them, and a countless throng goes before them. In other words, they're not the only one. There's lots of folks like that. So he says, so how can you console me with your nonsense? Nothing is left of your answers but falsehood. So is Job justified when he says the wicked should face the consequences of their sin instead of their children? Is he justified when he says that? Is he right? What does the theology of the New Testament tell us about our culpability for sin? Whose sin am I responsible for? So I need to repent. I need to confess. I need to invite the Spirit of God to change my heart. My children have to do that for themselves. So did Job have that idea right? I would say, yeah, he did. Now, is this making sense? See, I don't think God wills that our children suffer. I think that's a part of human sin, is that it is our sin choice that then afflicts and inflicts upon our children pain, trouble, sorrow. Okay, that's because we're fallen. But that's far different from saying my children are culpable for my sin. So what's Job frustrated with, that idea that children would suffer for the wickedness of their parents? Because that is what the three amigos are saying. Okay, you see how it's somebody has played a thousands of years game here of what's that little game we used to play where we whispered in somebody's ear, and then by the time it got to the other end, we find out what they're saying was originally said? Gossip. Playing gossip, okay? The idea of playing gossip. That's sort of what's happened here. God was saying that when we sin, that sin affects our children down to the third. It can become a generational curse when it's not dealt with and we're not honest about it. It can then be passed on to our children. Does this make sense? But that is not to say what it seems like the three amigos are saying, that your children have to pay for your sin. There you go. We aren't saying it makes sense. And they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and so on and so on, just like the shampoo commercial. Yes, it does get crazy after a while. Which came first? You don't know. There's no way to know. So so he's saying what you guys have changed in understanding of. You've taken something that was maybe true, and now it's no longer true because you've misused that. Does this make sense? So my last question. What is Job's point about the wicked and the righteous dying and being buried together side by side? So if the good guys die and the poor and needy die and then the corrupt guys die and they get buried, what's that saying? And they're all there. They're right there beside each other. Well, that's what we would like, right? It would be nice if it was neat and tidy that way, okay? But the whole issue that Job's bringing up is it's not nice and tidy. Because what is the real bottom line about all this stuff, this whole back and forth in this dialogue? And that is, you can't reduce it all to a pattern. You can't reduce it all to a system. You just can't. Do it. It doesn't work that way. It is not that way. God is not that way. And it frustrates us to no end because we do have something in us, point at Jay because he's our resident marshal. There is something in us created in the image of God that knows what justice is and longs for justice. And we want justice. It's just we want it for all those bad people. Yeah. And we like it when we can point to it and say, see, they got what they deserve. Because then we know everything's worked right. And so, in a sense, what Zophar and the other guys are saying is, we see evidence right here in front of us that God squashes the evil. Okay, fess up, Job. But it doesn't work that way. All right. Any thoughts? I would have to go back to they've seen nothing. If you look at the whole thing about Zophar saying the lie underneath the tongue and you won't confess, they haven't seen anything. They're extrapolating. They're saying this is the way it works. God squashes those who are evil. He does not let them prosper. You have suffered all this stuff. You must be really bad, Job, because good things don't happen to bad people. Bad things don't happen to good people. Anything else? This is, again, you know why this feels this way? Is because it isn't neat, nice, and tidy. As we work through this, sometimes it's kind of frustrating and open-ended. Yes, either they've been taught that or they want to believe that. But it is important that we do have an anchor for and a lens for what is true. And we have an authority that is beyond ourselves, that is beyond reproach. That is extremely important. So yes, as we see things the way they are, we have to see the way things are, not just the way we see things. Which is why, as we sit here and we look at this text with the full revelation of what God has done through Jesus, we look at this in a different way because we've received that, not because we're smarter or better. We just see it in the fullness of everything, and our lens is different. Here's a question that's not there in the text. As frustrated as Job is with these guys, is he, in response, condemning them the way that he has been condemned by them? I'm not talking to man. I'm talking to somebody else. He has. I mean, his strongest words, if you look at all this narrative and this dialogue, his strongest words are actually ones that he directs at God, not these other guys. Pay attention to that. Kind of interesting. I think it's interesting. We're going to pray. All right. Anthony.